Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
You might remember we recently here on Open House had a delightful interview with Dr. Amine Shahar-Ian about her research finding that the more frequently you read to your kids, the higher their NAPLAN scores. Well, Dr. Shahar-Ian from the Australian Catholic University's Institute for Learning Sciences and Teacher Education has now released further research showing that the way you read to your children improves their memory and their learning outcomes, their cognition, their thinking skills, and their social outcomes, which you might say is intuitive, but it's great to have the data on it. Better than that, though, she says she's been able to correlate different modes of reading with better outcomes for kids, and therefore to say that if you do these things when you read, it will be better for your kids all around. It's just delightful, and we thought it'd be fantastic to invite Amine back to give us some tips about how to read. Welcome back to Open House.
Well, thank you for having me again.
A lot of people have been very interested in what you were saying last time about reading to your kids. So now we can add some more detail based on a study that you've done of what works best when working with your children to get great results. So firstly, tell us how was that research done?
In this research, we have invited around 200 families into our labs or into our study sessions. And these families, mothers and fathers, were invited to come and read a book for their parents, for their children. This book is a picture book, so it has no text, but it's an old fairy tale that we expected most of the parents would be familiar with. It's the book which is called The Wolf and Seven Little Goats. And then when these parents came, we recorded how they told the story to their children, and we tested the children. Subsequently, we tested the children quite extensively on the levels of children's cognitive and social skills. Hmm. With cognitive skills, we tested children on the level of language skills, verbal ability, but also different tasks of language, for example, sentence comprehension and grammar. We also tested children on other elements of cognitive skills, which we call executive function. Mm. For example, memory, mm-hmm. or the ability to shift attention. These are the baseline of our decision-making skills, let's say. So we have tested children on their cognitive skills, but also we have tested children on some social skills. For example, we have tested their friendliness, how much they are liked among their friends. We have tested their cooperation skills, their pro-social behavior, how proactive they are in going and helping other children, their self-control. These are the type of skills which we called social skills.
All right, so the hypothesis you're testing then sounds like it was something along the lines of the way parents read to kids in general, which you witnessed then, observed in your setting, that's had an impact on building these cognitive and social skills. And then I guess you were trying to correlate different methods of reading to kids, different ways of doing that, with those skills themselves. Is that what you were doing?
Absolutely, yes. Yes, okay. That is correct.
All right, well then let's find out what worked well. And I gather the first tip is to tune in to your child.
Yes. So something we observed is that some children are involved in this task of reading and some children don't become involved. So for some of these couples, the dyads that they're coming to the lab and reading together, well, obviously, the task is mutual. For some, the parent is just quickly telling a story and going through them, the story and the pages and the pictures. And when the child asks a question, parents might quickly say, all right, let me finish this. I'll tell you later.
Oh.
So something we found is that it is important that the parent tries to to make the task more mutual, mm-hmm. so the child is actually involved. A part of that is to ask yourself, is the child interested or not? If they are not interested, maybe I need to go and grab a different book, or maybe I need to ask them more questions, or maybe I need to let them to be involved, so have their attention to the bits of the story that they are interested. Basically making it a mutual, a joint story reading.
Yeah, an exploration together, what's happening. So the second tip flows out of that, which is ask your child questions while you're reading to them.
Absolutely, absolutely. So asking questions means that you're involving the child in the task. You're also, as a parent, you will realize what is the level of your child's knowledge if you ask them questions. Like we see that quite often there are vocabularies in the book, in the conversation, when we are reading to children, whether it's from a text or not. There are some vocabulary that children don't understand, but I have observed that most often children don't ask that. It doesn't occur to them to say, well, I don't know that word. But if the parents ask them, do you know this word? They say no. Mm. And you can explain to them. So asking questions, it has a lot of benefits. Mm. One is you make it more of a mutual task together. One is you realize what is the level of your child's knowledge. And then you can actually help them to go to a different level.
I like the sort of questions that are along the lines of, and this is going to be good, if you, the book that you use was a picture book, so what's that animal thinking at the moment? What do you think is going to happen next? These questions that sort of go beyond the text, if you like.
Absolutely, absolutely. So that helps children with their imagination and with their creativity and abstract thinking. All of the skills we want to, you know, get out of this session of reading to the children.
Isn't it one of the most important things you can possibly do to build this inquiry, this inquiring mind? You're in a safe place, you're with your parents, you're building your inquiring mind, you're developing your social skills. All of this is happening around the activity that might be reading, but there's so much more going on.
Absolutely, yes, I can't agree more.
So we've got tune into your child is tip one, ask questions is tip two, go beyond the images or reading the text is tip three. Well, there you have it. So going beyond those images.
See, reading is not like a lecture. You're not just telling your child things. We see that some parents regard this as a lecture. They either read through the text quickly and they feel like I have to accomplish the task of going to the end of this story.
I mean, I don't want to be critical of the people you had in your your study, but did you see people that had such a functionary idea about reading to their kids?
I don't look at it so critically. I can understand that people have different personalities. So sometimes parents might think, well, we need to get to the end of this story as going, you know, accomplishing this task is the most important thing. While, you know, getting a bit sidetracked that while you're doing this, all of those little steps are also important,
Yes, I do understand now. And I just, as a little aside, I've got to say, as a father, one of the songs that used to really cut through to me was the John Lennon song. It's called Beautiful Boy. And there's a line in there and it says, life is what happens to you when you're busy making other plans. And so anyway, but back to tip number four, which is this, make logical links between different parts of the story. Okay, so how do you do that and what's going on there?
Okay, so this was my favorite part, probably this one and the next one. But let me just say first that there are two elements to reading a book. One is, if there is a text, you're reading from a text. One is telling a story. So there is a story in these lines, and you're telling this story. Hmm. When you're reading from the text, often, not always, this logical link is already built, especially if you have a good book. The author has already sat down and thought about how to attach these different parts of the book together. Well, often, again, I emphasize that it's not always the case, but often it's the case. When you're telling a story, and storytelling by itself is very important, because in fact, the storytelling might be the more important bit that helps children, understanding logic and understanding.
Well, it's because a story is narrative, and a narrative has a logical flow. So you're learning a whole sequence and function or syntax and so on.
Yes, absolutely. So in this storytelling or describing the pictures, we see that sometimes a parent see in pictures of a book, things happen very quickly. You can't have pictures for every bit that is happening, like the wolf. And at one page, we see that the mother, the goat mother, is saying goodbye to her children, to the little goats, and say, "Okay, I'm going to get some food for you," and she leaves. The next page, we see that the wolf comes and knocks on the door. So when one parent looks at this, the parent who doesn't go beyond the picture, so these are all connected to each other. The parent who doesn't go beyond the picture, they say, okay, well, look, the mother is saying, oh, your kids are hungry, I'm going to get some food for you. And she leaves. And once she's not there, the wolf comes and knocks on the door. This is quite correct, right? There's nothing wrong with that.
It's also just more than a wee bit scary, but go on.
Okay, no, I don't want to scare you. Let me to stop if you're getting scared. No, so then the next bit is, the problem here is, how did the wolf know that the mother is not there? How come the wolf just suddenly appeared? It's as if the wolf comes every morning and knocks on the door in this house, right? There is no logic in there. When parents pay attention that there is no logic in here, so they say, so the mother left and the wolf, who was sun bathing in the jungle, saw that the mother is going, and he thought to himself that, oh, I think the little ghost should be alone at home, and it's a good time to go and have a fat lunch.
Dr. Shahayan, just please tell me they turn out okay in the end.
Oh dear! Have you not heard this?
No, I mean I'm really in the moment. Okay, so that's good. So go beyond the make logical links, fill in the gaps. That's all great. Tip five: add some relevant details. So this, what do you mean by relevant details, and how would you add them?
Okay, so relevant details. Parents tell, they say a lot of details, like this boy who is tall and playing basketball and running fast and et cetera, et cetera. When you are picking which detail you want to tell, I think parents need to think about what detail is relevant to the context. Again, a good example is the parent says, the smallest child who was wearing a blue top said, oh, we need to be careful. It might not be our mother. Well, wearing a blue top is a detail, which is correct. We can see it in the picture, but it might not be so relevant. Another parent says, the smallest one, who was also the cleverest and very careful. Being clever and very careful is relevant to the context of thinking more critically and saying, oh, it might not be our mother. So that's the type of detail that we want. Basically, we want parents to keep thinking and helping their children to be thinking and thinking more. And that is the kind of detail that they call relevant detail.
Our guest on Open House is one of our Open House favourites, Dr. Amine Shahayan from ACU. And some research that has looked at how parents read to their kids, how they read. And tracking that back against the cognitive and social skills of those children, making some conclusions about what works really well to develop your children when you are reading to young children, to develop their cognition and social skills. So tip one was tune into your child. Tip two was ask questions. Tip three, go beyond describing the images or just reading the text. For picture books, there's lots of details you can fill in. Tip four is make logical links between different parts of the story. Tip 5 was to add relevant details, not irrelevant ones, but relevant ones. And the final tip from you, Dr. Shahayan, is to talk about mental and emotional concepts. So this was going to go deeply into the social skills development, I imagine.
Yes, that is correct. That is correct. As I've said, you need parents who do think of abstract concepts. Mental concepts are the ones when we talk about emotions or when we talk about beliefs and desires. These are the things that we can't really point to. When I say I'm thinking, you can point to I and, you know, but you can't really point to think because think is something inside my head. Yeah. And parents who do repeatedly explain to their children these mental concepts because, in fact, they're actually very difficult for children to gain and understand. It's a milestone when children come to understand mental states. But when they do, it gives them good tools to be able to build successful social relationships.
I love that. So one of the first stages of development, as I seem to recall it, was when the child recognises that they are not the whole world, that there's themselves, then there's the world, that there's another outside of them. That's very early on, I think. Someone called it the mirror phase, didn't they? Lacan, seem to recall. So then when you realise that you are a thinking being, is that the next stage? When do you realize that you're a feeling being? Is that a further stage? How does that all work?
Piaget also has described this, that there is me and then there is the world outside me. So that is more, it can even come under the umbrella of understanding the physical concept of different people and the world and objects, right? Mm-hmm. But this understanding mental state, I mean, after that, it comes to understand that there is a world of concepts which are not so tangible. They are abstract concepts. And then one needs to understand other people as entities who hold some concepts which are not some basically states which are not so like an object that we can point to. So your question, I understand that your question is whether a first step is for the child to understand their own mental states. I would say yes, that is correct. So a first step is that I understand I like something is this liking, or I am, for example, happy is my own emotion, or I know about something is this knowing is myself.
Well, these are different,
and then understanding
though, aren't they?
That, yes,
I feel happy is different from I know this is blue.
Yes, yes, they are different. Yes, absolutely, they are different. And also there is there are some hypotheses around there are different steps. For example, we understand desires first, and then we understand beliefs, and then we understand knowledge and so on.
Right, that's what I'm... Yes, excellent. And then I imagine, because this is very important in living in the world, in getting on in at school and in succeeding in later life, to actually then have an emotional intelligence that someone else will feel a certain way and I can affect their feelings, or I should take their feelings into account in the way I behave.
Yes, absolutely. That is correct.
So do you help build all of those rich things when you're reading to your kids if you simply say things like, how do you think the bear is feeling at the moment in this story? What do you think the mother would feel if she came home and found all her children had been eaten by the wolf?
Absolutely. So, or even saying, you know, what will the mother think? Because then again, you're pointing to the mother thinking about something. But yeah, that is correct.
Will she blame herself?
Well, she shouldn't. So we don't want mothers blaming themselves all the time.
Well, there it is. I love what you've done here, and I do hope people are able to get hold of your research, which we'll give some links to in a moment. Dr. Shahayan, thanks for the beautiful way that you tell these stories. It's great.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me, and it was great speaking to you again.
We always enjoy it. Dr. Amine Shahayan, she's from Australian Catholic University's Institute for Learning Sciences and Teacher Education. They do some really interesting stuff there. Really accessible, great stuff about helping kids at school and at home, especially in their reading and other things. We'll have links and all. We'll have the information about those steps on our website when we publish that sometime during the course of the next week, openhousecommunity.com.au. And that storybook that they used when they observed people reading to their kids, telling them the story out of what was a picture book, was the Wolf and Seven Young Goats, sometimes known as the Big Bad Wolf story. It's a grim fairy tale. It's certainly grim. It's one of the Brothers Grimm fairy tales. And I don't know if you remember it to the end. I think I must have blanked this out from my childhood, but the wolf comes to the door like three times, first with a deep voice, "I am your mother, and I have some food for you, let me in." And they say, "You're not our mother, that's not the right voice, nick off." So the wolf comes back with a high-pitched voice, "I am your mother, let me in." And they notice that the wolf's feet are the wrong colour under the door, so they nick off. The wolf then steals flour from the bakery, covers his feet, I suppose it's his, I don't know, covers his feet with flour, and the kids say, "Oh, that must be our mother. Yes, we're very hungry," and lets the wolf in. They let the wolf in. The little one hides in the grandfather clock and is saved. The others get eaten. I'm glad this is a nighttime program. The others get eaten. The mother comes home and finds that all except for the one have been eaten. But the wolf is asleep under a tree because the wolf has eaten too much. So the mother then conducts what can only be described as unusual stomach surgery using a pair of scissors, rescues the children who have not been digested, replaces them with rocks. I'm not making this up. This is the story. Replaces them with rocks, sews them up again, and then when the wolf wakes up, like, "Hello, excuse me." I mean, you read this to a kid of today, they're going to go, "Dad, what about, how come, why didn't, what happened when?" Anyway, the wolf wakes up and is very thirsty, ghost falls into the river, because his stomach is full of rocks, he drowns, and the rest of them anyway, all live happily ever after. And that's what passed for entertainment back in the days before we had violent video games. Well, there's a lesson in that, isn't there?
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.